My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables Group. It's good to be back here again. Just got back from Knoxville, Tennessee. See my son and grandkids, two of my grandkids, and flew my father in there too. And that was a lot of fun. It's good, but it is good to be back home. Good to be back with you guys. And tonight we're going to try to talk a little bit about step nine. I want to share some stuff. I want to share about some personal experiences I had with step nine, maybe at the end of this deal. Read a couple of things out of the big book. I mean, I'm sure you all know this. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. This is all my personal opinion, of course. This is my own experience. That's what we're supposed to share about, our own experience. You know, it may not jive with your experience, may not be your deal. You may find it objectionable, completely different. I'm not talking about you. I'm just talking about me. I've been around for almost 30 years. It'd be 30 years in January, so I've developed a certain amount of opinions. You know, I had opinions when I got into here, but now my opinions are pretty much based upon my own experiences and the experiences I've seen with others in here who either don't make it or do make it. And you know, as I've said many times before here, experience is probably more important than anything else. As my first sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with you guys don't know that one, huh? I know. The man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. You know, you can share that. You can, you know, if you feel like it's necessary. I only get credit the first time. The first time you say, you know, as I've heard Russell say, the second, this is the AA rule. The second time you say, as I've heard say in AA. And third time you can, then it's yours, you say, as I always say. That's the way. You gotta give me credit once, you know. I mean, I stole it, you can steal it from me, but that's the way AA works, you know. Let me read you a couple things from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is like a warm-up. We were talking on the way over here about talking and everything like that. I said, nah, man, I spent the first 15 minutes. I didn't even start speaking until I'm 40 minutes into the deal. So, you know, the last 5 minutes is probably good. But this is like my warm-up exercises, you know, getting to the big book. So I know what I'm, you know, because this is pure AA. Page 2, chapter 2, there is a solution. You know, by the way, we know about step 9. It's we're making amends now. And I'm going to talk about making amends. You know, that's dangerous. That's like doing something. You get it? Doing something? You know, actually doing something. Not getting ready to do something, but actually doing something. You know, what do they say? Actions speak louder than words. You know what they always say about A? When all is said and done in A, there'll be a lot more said than done. I can tell you that right now. That's for sure. Page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Now I'm going to share my personal experiences, but I always like to read a lot from the big book so that I know I'm really well grounded somewhere in the book as opposed to my total personal opinion. You know, I don't want to be grounded in this is my feelings, or this is how I feel about stuff. Because sometimes I sent the child support and sometimes I didn't, you know, depending upon how I was feeling, you know. I mean, I really intended to send it, you know what I mean? But stuff came up, you know. So when you start doing things based upon feelings, all of a sudden you don't send them the money, you don't pay the bills, you buy, all sorts of things can happen because of feelings, even intense feelings, okay? So I want to stay really close to the book, so I like reading stuff out of the book. You know, the good thing about reading stuff out of the book, which we're supposed to harmoniously agree on, is even if nothing I say makes any sense whatsoever, at least you'll get something. I've heard people come up to me and say, you know, that was really great when you shared about that and shared about something. And they tell me what it is. I say, you mean when I read that part out of the big book? And they say, yeah. I said, well, that's in the big book. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You know, which is another way of saying I never heard it before. Do you think it's possible to read this book, you know, and not really know what it says? Like skip over parts, not even see parts. I have people that call me up, I'm a lawyer, they call me up and they say, I entered into this agreement with somebody and blah, 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 and now they're suing me and I walked out and he did this to me and I did this to me. I say, I say, well, okay, fine, no problem. Come on into my office. You know, this consultation fee. Come on in, make an appointment. And they come on in, and I say, bring all the necessary documents and all the stuff. And they come in, they sit down, and they start to tell me the story. You know, he did this, and I did that, and I don't know, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, I need to see the contract, the thing you signed. I need to see the fork. I need to see what you agreed to. This thing I signed, this is why I didn't bring it. I said, what does that have to do with anything? You know what I mean? I'm an alcoholic. I make these rules as I go along. You know what I mean? Well, the contract, forget the contract. Contract has nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? He screwed me, you know? And yeah, but I need to see what the agreement was in writing. Well, I'll tell you what the agreement was. No, I want to see what it says in writing to make sure I can, you know, and then you can tell me what you think. You understand what I'm saying? So let's make believe that what we got here is the contract. This is what you're signing on to. It says, men and women are, what does it say? If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Rarely have we seen a person fail. It was thoroughly followed our path. It was thoroughly done what we said here. So let's sort of read this thing. Not like alcoholics. You know how alcoholics read this thing. You know, you read it and say, yeah, but that's, you know, it's not one size fits all. You can do whatever, it's whatever goes, you know what I mean? Whatever you want to do, whatever I feel like it. Don't tell me what to do. I do it my way, you do it your way. It's like basically throw it in the fireplace. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? It don't mean anything. It's just words. You know, I'm going to do it whatever I want to do. And you know what we call those guys? Slippers. We call them slippers. Not putting them, that's what they are. They're slippers. They do whatever they want to do. You know, because the main characteristic of an alcoholic, myself and everybody else included, is defiance. You know, they don't even like what I'm saying now. Who am I? Who am I to say that, you know? It don't matter. It's like a giant self-cleaning oven. Bullshit burns off every 2 years or so. One day, when they're 60 years old and they haven't been able to put more than 2 years together, they'll say, maybe I've screwed this thing up. You know what I mean? Maybe I should, you know, it's hard to obey and follow the rules. It's hard to actually do what's in the document. It's hard to follow the rules and agree and to follow the simple rules, read the document, and sometimes you even need somebody like a sponsor to interpret the document for you, who says something like, listen, stupid, that's not what it says. Because you can read stuff that's plain English and you can say, well, I think it means this. It says, it doesn't mean that at all. You want it to mean that, this, because that's what you want to do. That's not what it means. You know, but if you're an alcoholic and you're willful and you're defiant and you're self-willed and riot and you want to do whatever you want to do, you know, why get a sponsor? Why listen to what a sponsor says? You might have to do something you don't want to do. So what I want to do is I want to talk about the big book and how it pertains to what I'm going to talk about as far as the ninth step is concerned, which has to do with following the rules and taking action. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution, that we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Okay? So, the great news that this book carries is that this is a common solution that will work for all of us. Not an individual. It's a common solution, works for everybody. Okay? You don't have to change it. You don't have to modify it. Okay? Now, by changing this book and modifying it, in the preface, now this isn't my opinion. You know how I know it's not my opinion? Because I'm reading from the book. This is, by the way, conference-approved material. I know I'll quote the Bible, I'll quote all these other things. Well, that's not, this is conference-approved. This is the basic text, this is the deal, okay? This is on page 11, Roman numeral 11. First thing you read in the book, it's called the preface. Because this book right here, that I'm reading from. This book that I'm reading from, right here, has become the basic text. You get it? If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the basic text for our society, and it's helped such a large number of alcoholic men and women to recovery. There exists a sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left untouched in the course of the revisions made for both the second and third editions, and also it's true for the fourth edition. So since this was written in 1939 and published, There's been no changes, really, up until today. No radical changes. This is the basic text, which we agree on. Now, if you don't agree, if you don't like it, that's fine. You know, the great thing about AA is there's no AA police force. You know? I mean, do whatever you want to do. But at least be honest and you say, I just don't agree with that part. I'm not going to do it. So when things don't go right for you or things screw up or something like that, don't blame AA. Don't say, well, I've been doing AA and it doesn't work for me. Just say, I decided not to do AA and it doesn't work for me. I mean, don't lambast Alcoholics Anonymous. So now I'm going to talk about a few things that I always talk about, because you know I'm like one of these guys that I'm big on the fact that I believe the big book is all about this, discovering and getting a relationship with God. And I want to see how that plays into, along with the rules, following the rules, and why it plays into the ninth step, and then maybe give a few personal experiences. So, let's start off somewhere. Page 25. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That's where you want to go. Well, maybe not. You know, it says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. If you want what we have, what did they have? They had found much of heaven. They were rocking the fourth dimension of existence, of which they had not even dreamed. Maybe you're coming in here. You don't want that deal. You know, there's really two doors in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, look at it this way. There's one door that says, discovered much of heaven and been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. And then there's another door. That's the not drinking door. I guess everybody comes in here and stands in front of the not drinking door. I just want to stop drinking. They're all in front of the not drinking door. So if you come into AA, you'll see thousands of people in front of the not drinking door. And you'll look over on the other side of the room, and there's about six or seven people hanging around the discovered much, you know, experienced much of heaven, been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence door. And every once in a while, you see a guy walk from the right side of the room, the not drinking door, and he moseys on over to the experienced much of heaven, been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence door. You very rarely see the rocketed to the fourth dimension existence walk over to the not drinking door. You know what I mean? They sort of hang on over there, you know? Now you may just want to say, hey, stay out of my sex life, stay out of my love life, stay out of my finances. I don't need your bullshit. I just want to stop drinking. You may just want to hang out on the not drinking door, and you're allowed to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Or you may see somebody in here who you believe is somewhere hopping around that, you know, much of heaven, rocking in the fourth dimension. You may want what that guy has. You might want to figure out how to stand in front of that door. Well, it says here, what these guys, what they had, what they're talking, see, when you read this book, written by these guys, and they're talking about their experience, and they're talking about the promises, and they're talking about all this stuff, understand, this is the stuff they're talking about that they had. I don't know what you think they had. This is the stuff. They didn't have the AA stuff you see in the rooms. They didn't have the hanging in there, you know, just making it one day at a time. You know what I mean? They were excited. They were enthusiastic. I'm not saying they didn't go through problems. Bill Wilson had depression and everything. But these guys were looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. They were excited about something more than just not drinking. I mean, you know, listen, sometimes if you're an alcoholic, the best you're ever going to do, you're 100%, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what's going wrong. If you get it to the end of the day and you're an alcoholic, you haven't had a drink, you're a success. And I mean that. Because sometimes the only thing you can point to, everything goes wrong, and you haven't had a drink, and I understand that deal, and you're a success, you can say, well, you know something? You know, everything went deal. I mean, I killed 15 people, you know, I raped a squirrel, you know, whatever it is, nothing went right. You know, but at least I didn't drink, you know, and you're a success if you're an alcoholic. But I'm telling you something, in the overall scheme of things, if you read this book and see what they have, you want to be on that rocket ship ride somewhere along the line. You want to get on that deal. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, they're talking about themselves. This is like Bill Wilson coming up here and talking to you. This is like Bob. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives, which is in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. This incredible things happen to us that we don't know how to do, but we have to blame it on Him. We have to give Him the credit. He's done it for us. These are unbelievable things. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. With a living creator, not a dead God. Not a piece of wood. Not a statue. A living creator with whom we may form a relationship and talk to him, can relate to him, have a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing enough to try. As a matter of fact, further on, we're going to give clear-cut directions given showing how we recovered, how to develop this relationship. These are going to be followed by 43 personal experiences. Each of us, each individual, in the personal stories describes in his own language and his own point of view the way he established his relationship with the Creator, with God. That's what this book is all about. That's what the whole thing is about, because he's going to be the one that's going to have, that's why in the promises it says we finally realize that he's doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. There is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. We can't manage our own lives, no human power could do it, but God could and would if he saw it. I mean, how many times, how many different ways do I have to say it? See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass to you and countless others. I mean, how many, you need to say it 100 different ways, 1,000 different ways? How many ways do you have to say it before an alcoholic, no matter how stupid he is or how bright he is, gets it? Gets that point. You go on. Somewhere. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the problem. We think it's the root of the trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, they retaliate. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. The alcohol is an extreme example of self will run riot. Though he usually doesn't think so. So don't pay attention to what you think. You're wrong. I'll say it again. Don't pay any attention to what you think. You're wrong. Your best thinking on your best day got you in here. You remember the years prior to your coming in here? Remember what you were doing? You were thinking, weren't you? Okay, I rest my case. You came in here, you got a sponsor, you said, I give it up, you said, what should I do? You stopped thinking, everything started working out, right? That should have been your, like, first hint. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of the selfishness, we must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. God doesn't say psychiatry makes that possible. How many people tried a psychiatrist before they came in here? How'd that work out for you? You know, how many people, you tried a lot of things before you got in here? God makes that possible. That's what the book is. What's the God that's on it? The God you're going to have a relationship with that's going to change everything for you. It's going to be miraculous. He's going to live in your heart and mind. He's going to be the center of the universe. He's going to do things for you that you couldn't do for yourself. Is that my opinion? No, I'm just quoting from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the basic text which we all agree on, right? That's why there's been no changes. I mean, is this heretical stuff? Is this crazy stuff? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people don't like the fact that I say this stuff because they don't like to do this stuff. But I'm just quoting from the book. There often seems no way of getting entirely rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral philosophical convictions galore. That means many of us were really smart, and we had really great ideas about how to do things. He says, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness as much by wishing or trying our own values. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. Stop thinking, stop managing, stop trying to figure it out, stop trying to regulate, move things around, figure out how to do it other than having to obey or, you know, do some of the things we've been talking about. I'm not going to go over what I went over until coming up here. I've talked to about submitting yourself to another's authority, submitting yourself to a sponsor's authority, doing what you're told, stuff like that, obedience with alcoholics don't want to hear, discipline. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He's the father, we're his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this is the concept. We're not in charge, he's in charge. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone. Now, this is what the deal is. When you made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, you give up what you think. We give up what you want to do. See, that's the hardest thing to give up. What you want to do. That's the thing you'll fight for. That's the thing that you cannot believe. You know, it says that some of these you bought. The thing that you really don't like, as an alcoholic, the things that I don't like, is the idea of anybody telling you, forget about what you want to do. That's what you'll go to the mat for. That's what you'll kill for. Forget about who cares what's important to you. Forget about what you want to do. Boy, that's worth fighting for. That's a scary deal. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed the freedom. Because believe it or not, and you may believe this or not until you get into it, until you do it, it's hard to explain, his way of doing things will get you a lot more and put you in a better shape than what you want to do. You know, and you should, and if you come into here, you should get that idea, you should have gotten that idea after many years of doing what you wanted to do and seeing where that got you. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful, and this is really the sentence that I want to really harp on tonight on step 9. We had a new employer being all powerful. Now here's the deal. How would you like to have a life where the God of your understanding, through your relationship with Him, gives you everything you need? Everything you need. Always. That you have how many people would like that deal? Okay? You like that deal? A few of you are unsure. You don't want to raise your hand. Why do you think somebody doesn't want to raise their hand on that? I'm telling you, what if I could tell you something right now that would give you everything you need for as long as you live, and there are guys sitting there, they don't want to raise their hand. You know why you don't want to raise your hand? Because you're wondering what the catch is. You want to hear the second part. You want to hear the, I mean, you'll take it for free. You'll take it for free if I say you don't have to do anything. You know what I mean? But you have a feeling if you raise your hand, you've signed a contract. And you don't want to sign the contract. You want to be that guy who goes to the lawyer and says, forget the contract. Let me tell you how I feel. Because you want to have the opportunity not to have to sign on to anything. Not to have to obligate yourself. You want to be childish. Like a child. You think you're entitled to something. You want what you want when you want it. Like a baby, like a 2-year-old. And you don't want to have to do anything because you're so great. Or you're so special, or something like that. You don't want to have to sign up or give up anything. So you're not willing to say, me, I want that. Just tell me what I have to do. You're still like that. You just haven't taken step 3 yet. The guys who didn't raise their hand, you just haven't taken step 3. You got to go home and look about that deal. Now, of course, that's just my opinion, so it can't hurt you. You're going to have to figure out how to stop thinking about it. You know, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Isn't that what it said in A Few Good Men? The truth, you can't handle the truth. Because that's the problem with the truth. The problem with the truth is when it's said, it hurt. You can't get rid of it. You can't stop thinking about it. And then one day you sit down and say, maybe that son of a bitch was right. That's for the people who didn't raise their hands. See, this stuff is easy if you're discerning. You can figure out stuff just like that. He provided what we needed. So how many people want whatever you need, you will get? Here you go. Here's the only thing you gotta do. You ready? You don't have to do it. Only if you want to sign on to Alcoholics Anonymous. This space, only if you want to sign on to this. He provided what we needed. If we kept close to Him and performed His work well. That's all you gotta do. Stay close to Him and perform His work well. Well, in order to stay close to Him, you're going to have to figure out who He is. Then you're going to have to figure out what? How to stay close to Him. And then what's the next thing you got to figure out? What His work is that He wants you to do. Right? Which is probably why, you know, and don't worry about people that are going to argue with you about that stuff. Say about the God thing, argue about, because in our basic text, which we all agree on, it says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. We are on the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We trust Him rather than us. We are in a world to play the role He assigns. It doesn't matter what you want. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. He assigns. We stay close to Him and do His work well, right? Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We can handle just about anything. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate to us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what we would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. Fear of everything. Fear of speaking in front of people. Fear of telling their testimony. Fear of what's going to happen to us. All sorts of fear. The stuff that sort of drives us around every day. What does it say in step six we're about? It says we have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained the rough way of what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now we're going to get rid of them, cast them out. Then when it starts talking about 8 and 9, it's interesting. You know what it says about 8? Why we do it? 8 and 9? It says at the moment, tell me if this isn't consistent. We've been talking about this all through the steps. Same thing. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in and of itself. Our real purpose, now remember what they said, He'll give us everything we need as long as we stay close to Him and do His work well. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God, service to Him, and the people about us. So if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and your whole life and your Creator is the centerpiece of your life and your real purpose is to be a maximum service to God and other people, and He'll give you everything you need as long as you stay close to Him and do His work, then the only question you have in your mind most of the time, I'm not saying I'm perfect or everybody's perfect, but the only question you have is, God, what will you have me do? What am I supposed to do? That's your purpose. That's what you know, I had a guy call me up in 3 months. He says, how do I know God's will? I said, you're going to be trying to figure that out for the rest of your life. You know, as time goes along, as you meet more and more people and you get more and more experience dealing with people, dealing with life, praying and doing what you have to do, it's going to be easier and easier for you to figure out His will for you. It's going to be easier for you to figure out. Sometimes when you're locked in alcoholism and you're new, it's like confusing. Because you're not sure what His will is, but you certainly know what you want to do, and you've been doing what you want to do all your life, so you're starting to think maybe His will is sort of like your, I think He wants me to go after that gal. I think he wants me to keep the money. You know, I've been thinking, I think God wants me to keep this money. You know what I mean? I think He wants, you know, it's going to be difficult unless you have some tools at your disposal. It's going to be difficult to think this way through. So let's do this. Instead of going backwards now, that I sort of like us to warm up. Instead of going backwards, let's try to figure out what God's will is for us. For all of us, right now. And I'm going to give you a suggestion about something. It doesn't even matter what you think God is or what relationship with God. We don't even have to go on the third step or anything. I'm going to give you some suggestions, okay? You can think about this. I think it's kind of logical. I think if the steps are what I think they are, it's to help you with your relationship with God, acknowledge God, have a better relationship with God, and finally get to step 11, where it says we try to improve our relationship with God because it's going to help us not only stay sober, but be emotionally sober, okay? If that's the truth, then I suggest to you that the steps, there's not one step or any part of one step that's designed to take us away from God. What do you think about that? If they're all designed to bring us closer to God, into a relationship with God, I don't think the steps are designed to hurt our relationship with God. So, here's my suggestion to you. If what we're supposed to do primarily, according to the book, is stay close to Him and do His work well, and do what He wants us to do, and we got a step that says, made direct amends to those people we've harmed, except when to do so would injure them or others. Here's my theory. I think God wants us to make direct amends to those people we have harmed. What do you think about that? I think that's pretty much His will for us. You know? Does that make any sense? I think if you've hurt somebody, emotionally, physically, in some way, He wants you to make it right. You know, the interesting thing is, as you all know, they were reading the Bible before they wrote all this stuff. And, you know, and I've already gone through that whole thing. It's in other steps and, you know, that we've talked about it, all the books they're reading. You read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and Sermon on the Mount and all that sort of stuff. And even in Sermon on the Mount, he says, hey, listen, you can sacrifice anything to me. You can believe in me. You can tell me you love me and everything. You bring a sacrifice to the altar. This is in Sermon on the Mount. But you want to know something? If you come to me and you got some screw up with your brother, hey, you just leave your sacrifice there. You go fix that deal up first. He wants us to be right horizontally if we're going to be right vertically. He doesn't want us screwing over people, having all sorts of stuff going on, you know, and coming to him anyway like nothing's going on. Now, we can argue or talk about, not even argue for days, why he wants that. Why does he want that? Okay? Well, I happen to believe, based upon personal experience in my own life, and maybe some of you have had this experience, that one of the reasons he wants that is he knows then we'll really be able to give our full attention to him. Because it's very hard to give your full attention to God and seeking God when you're thinking about that son of a bitch down the hall. Or my damn ex-wife. Or this one. Or feeling guilty. You know, everybody ever feel guilty about something? You're worried about whether this guy will call, or the IRS will call, or your ex-wife will call, or whether you're going to be arrested. You're worried about all this stuff. Very hard to think about God and think about how you can stay close to him and do his work well. Right? I mean, you know, I think it's, I tell clients I have one track mind. I can worry about your case or my fee. I mean, that's just true. I mean, I got to tell you something. I don't want to be sitting there worried about, well, I think God has a one track mind. You know what I mean? He wants you to have a one track mind. He wants you to be, spend your time focusing on him. He doesn't want you spending your time focusing on all that crap, all those worldly clamors that got Bill Wilson in trouble. And I have a feeling if anybody's ever slipped or slid in here or had any problems, it's not because you were thinking about God. It's because you were thinking about other things. You're involved in other things. So I think it has a very practical approach of doing that way. But you know, the truth of the matter is, and I hate to say this, so I really don't hate to say it. I like saying it. I like saying it. I like saying it because it's true. The truth of the matter is, under my theology and my way of thinking, the way I read the book, it really doesn't matter if I give you a good reason. It doesn't really matter whether you understand it. It's what he wants us to do. You know, why? Why? I sponsored a lot of people. I never counted them. I wasn't told I had to count them. A lot. Okay? I get calls all the time. So what do I do? Let me do it this way. When you have to start explaining the explanation, in other words, it's bad enough to have to give an explanation to some guy with 2 weeks. Who, you know, like me, has two neurons working and they're waving goodbye. It's bad enough you have to give an explanation to somebody in 2 weeks or 2 years or whatever it is. When after you give the explanation, you've got to then explain the explanation. Hang up the phone. Because what they're really trying to tell you is, I ain't ready. I ain't ready. You got to recognize when we have a group called Al-Anon down there. They meet down the hall because they don't know how to handle alcoholics that aren't ready. They don't even know how to recognize them when they're not ready. Like the guy who calls me on the phone, he says, Russ, it's Joe. This happened 2 days ago. Joe? Yeah, Joe. Yeah, Joe. Joe, Joe Perez. Joe, I'm sorry, I don't know. He says, yeah, we met, we talked. I said, Joe, I just know a lot of guys named Joe. I'm sorry. He says, you don't know me? I said, yeah. He says, I said, when did we speak? He says, 6 years ago. I was at a meeting and I spoke to you. He says, look, I'm ready to really do this thing. I'm ready to really do this thing now. He says, well, okay. He says, so I want to know, you know, what meetings I can go. Where can I go to? I says, well, tonight we're going to this meeting. He says, well, I can't make it tonight. He says, I'm just coming off a run and I can't make it tonight. You know what I mean? He said, I said, well, tomorrow night, which happened to be Tuesday night, it was last week. I said, tomorrow night, we're going up to this group. We're all getting on the bus. You're inviting me. He says, I can't make it tomorrow night. He says, what you got going Thursday? At which point I said, listen, you're full of shit. Call me up when you're serious. And I hung up the phone. You know, if I was to tell him what we're doing Thursday, I might actually make the mistake of worrying whether he's going to show up on Thursday, which you know he's not. You know what I mean? And, you know, come on. Because people are ready. They say, I'll be there. So sometimes I get a call from somebody, and they'll say something like this, blah, 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 what do you want me to do? I said, why don't you come down and have lunch with us? Meet some of the guys, hang out, fellowship with us. And some guys say, okay, where do I have to be? I know you find this hard to believe, but there are people in this world, and Alcoholics Anonymous will say what time and where. And they'll show up. You know? I call them potential old timers. Then other guys will say something like this. Why do I have to go to lunch? And sometimes if I'm in like a sometimes I say you don't and hang up the phone, but you know, if I'm in a real nice mood, I'll say something. I said, listen, one of the things that really helps people out is that they start having relationships with other men in Alcoholics Anonymous so that we can have a give and take and talk about ourselves and just have a feeling of some sort of camaraderie, and it helps. I'm not going to go into any deep stuff. There's more than that to it, but and you know there is once you get in a group like that, but I say, and that's the deal. And I'll give them that explanation. And so we want to meet you, and they want to meet you, and I'm sure you have stuff to share, and I think you'll have a good time. And so I think it would help you out if you met some of these guys. Now, after that, once in a while, they say okay, and they come on down, or they don't. But every once in a while, but you know, more likely than not, sometimes some of them say something like this. Well, why does that help? Now, when you get to that third why, that's time to hang up the phone, because he's wasting your time. Because your time is being wasted. He needs to go for another year out on the run until he gets into a treatment center. You can ask them why, because they're good at answering whys. I'm not good at answering. You know, if they're asking why, they haven't drank enough. So the bottom line is one of the things I got to do is I got to do this thing. I got to do, and you know, what's the only, it doesn't matter how you feel. It says, may direct the men's wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them. It's about God. It's about what he wants you to do, his will for you, to stay close to him and do his work. Well, this is the work he wants you to do. You want to know what's the first thing God wants me to do? Climate? No, he just wants you to fix up this stuff, this crap, okay? You know, so somebody says, well, but let me tell you how I feel about that. I don't care how you feel. I mean, I'll listen to you and we'll talk about it, but really it has nothing to do with how you feel. It does not, I'm scared. We can talk about how you're scared or you're worried and all this stuff, but the truth is, there's nothing in there about if you feel like it, or depending upon how you feel. You know, the whole book is about having a relationship with God and then staying close to him and doing his work well. Okay, here's your first assignment. After you do the 8-step list, okay, figure out the amends and make the amends. That's his work for you. You don't have to sober up the world. You don't have to 12-step all over the place. You don't have to figure it out. It's written there in black and white, your first assignment. Clean up your crap. I don't care how you feel. Clean up your crap. You know, this is beyond your feeling. This is about, he is the father, you are the children. He is the director. He is the agent. He is the principal. You are the agents. Just do what you're told. How's that? Well, why? Forget it. You're not ready. Why has nothing to do with it? Because you signed the contract. Well, I didn't sign that contract. Well, then you're not involved in this deal. You're involved in something else. And you're not going to get, don't say to me, why do I keep on slipping? Why don't I feel the way I feel? Why don't I have what you have? Because you haven't signed on the contract and you're not doing it. So do your deal. Okay, does it matter? Does it even matter how the other person feels? It doesn't even matter how the other person, you know, the only thing it says about the other person, the only caveat to it, The only reason you have to even figure out about the other person or even think about it is because the one distinction it makes or the exception it makes is that unless it'll harm the other person, do more harm than good, unless it'll cause harm to others. But if it doesn't cause harm to others, if you bounce it off your sponsor, it's not going to cause a harm, then really, how are they going to react? How are they going to feel? What are they going to think about me? That's not even part of the equation. That's a non-starter. Now, you want to think about that because you're like me. You're an alcoholic. You want to try to control. You want to think. You want to figure it out. You don't want to just follow it. You don't want to follow directions. It's not that you don't want to follow directions. Let me say it differently. You are, like me, hair-triggered not to follow directions. This goes against your grain. You want to know what's going to happen to me at the end. How's this going to turn out? You want to know the whole deal. You want to run the whole show. I understand that this is very difficult. It goes against our nature. If it didn't go against our nature, we wouldn't have to go to AA. We wouldn't have to go to meetings. We wouldn't have to listen to this crap that I'm spewing right now. We'd be doing this stuff. You're saying, I can't even believe that there are actual people out there that do this stuff anyway. This is the way they live their lives. They're called normal people. You know, they don't get into trouble or anything like that. They just do this stuff. It's second nature to them. I want to, you know, there's two things I'm going to share with you. Well, three things I'm going to share with you. Try to do it quickly. Three personal stories about 9-step. Has a little bit of my opinion, but I'll try to, you know, I had a guy just do a 9-step. I happen to believe, this is my personal belief, that a 9-step is not about I'm sorry. It's just not about I'm sorry. It's not, doesn't mean you can't ever mention the word you're sorry. But you see, I'm an alcoholic. My whole life is I'm sorry. I talked about this last, my whole life is, you know, I raped your mother, I raped your sister, I killed your dog, I whatever it is, I stole your money, I burned down yourself, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Am I sorry? No, I'm not sorry. Why should I be sorry? You're the asshole. You know what I mean? It's just like, what I mean is get off my back. Because I say I'm sorry, now I'll hold the grudge for a year, but if I say to you I'm sorry, if I deign to say I'm sorry, and you even look at me funny, I said I was sorry, this is the way it works. This is the alcoholic dance. You know, I beat up my wife, you know, I put her in the hospital, and I walk in and I say, with Rose, I say, I'm sorry. If she looks at me funny, like she doesn't immediately forgive me, I said, I'm sorry means, it's not that I'm really sorry, it's just that you are supposed to forgive me. You're not supposed to hold a grudge against me. I cannot suffer consequences. I cannot stand the fact. It makes me uncomfortable that you don't like me, so you have to immediately tell me, you love me, you like me, there's no problem that I broke your arm. You think that's funny? It is funny. It's pathetic. And that's the way alcoholics think. So if you think it's pathetic, then you think you're pathetic if you act that way. Because every alcoholic is like that. That's the way we are. I'm sorry. But we don't give a crap about anybody else except ourselves and our own feelings. Just get off our back. Had a guy come up to me about a year ago. And he said this to me. He's in the audience? Well, he's in the audience. He said, look, I have an amends to make to you. I'm just going to say this to you. Well, he said, I have an amends to make to you. I said, yes. He says, I know you don't remember me. I said, actually, I thought I did. But I said, okay. He says, but I just want to tell you I'm sorry. I said, okay. He says, it's not important what it's for. I just want to tell you I'm sorry. And I said, well, hey, you know, no problem. Have a nice life, you know. I mean, as long as he got it off his chest, you know. I mean, this guy was right on the bean, you know. I guess it helped him out, you know, whatever it does for him. You know, I guess he thought that was something. I guess he thought that was making amends. Obviously, this is a man who doesn't have a sponsor. Or if he does, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because you know what I start off with? I was wrong. Because if you don't say I'm wrong, you don't even know what you're saying I'm sorry for. And you know what I like? I don't know about you, but when somebody wrongs me, you know what I like? What I'm already ready to forgive them is when they come to me and say, you know what I did? See, I was wrong. I say, hey, thank you for validating me. You know, I mean, I know I was right, but thank you for telling me at least. Thank you for at least giving me that, you know? I got divorced from my first wife, and you know why I got divorced? She's a wonderful woman, beautiful son, beautiful gal, nice gal. You know why I wanted to get divorced? Because I wanted to cheat on her. And I couldn't. I didn't have the balls to cheat on my wife. So what happened was I had to get a divorce in order to go out with other women. I left my wife with a child. I abandoned her. Now listen, I paid child support. I went through the whole process. I was wearing a three-piece suit. You know what I mean? I'll tell you, you walk out on a woman who does absolutely nothing to you, who's a good woman, because you want to play around and drink. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I abandoned her. I'm not proud of that. I'm just reporting it to you, okay? I abandoned this woman because I had no integrity, no loyalty. I was a bum. I was irresponsible, and I walked away from her, and I walked away from my son. That is not something a man does. That's not something a decent human being does, and I was wrong, okay? And as I'm walking out the door, I'm saying I'm free. I'm celebrating. I'm happy as a clam. So I had to make amends to my wife, my ex-wife. She was in the hospital. She was undergoing surgery. I walked in to see her. You know, and she had been, she's a decent gal. She's not an alcoholic. She never said bad, she never did a lot of bad stuff or anything. And I walked in. The first words out of my mouth is I started telling her where I was at and what was going on. She had some idea. I said, just want to tell you that when I left you, when I got a divorce, when I did all that stuff, and I wrapped down the thesis, I was so wrong. I didn't say I'm sorry. I said, I was wrong. What I did here was wrong. What I did there was wrong. What I did, I wronged you, and I was wrong. And I'm sorry for it. And you know what she said to me? It's an amazing thing. That's why you never take anything for granted. She says, I thought I was wrong. I thought I wasn't a good enough wife. I thought I could have done more. Can you imagine? I would have never imagined that in a million years, that for years she was beating herself up, thinking that she was a failure because she could have. And I said, you know, the only thing that would have happened if you would have stuck with me or done more is you would have ended up hating me, and we would have never been able to talk the way we're talking right now. You did the exact right thing in divorcing me, because she filed the papers against me. I was no good, and I was wrong, and I was, you know, we have a relationship now. You know what I mean? Because I was able to say I was wrong. You know, that kind of deal. And, why do you need to be prudent, to be smart about it? when I was about 5 years sober, I was sponsoring a guy. And it's a little cute story. It's short. I'm not going to be able to get to the other story I have. It's a 15-minute. But I will tell you this one story because it's cute. But it's true. I sponsored a guy who's sober today. He's doing great. And he was telling me about how 20 years prior to that. Now, this is like, I don't know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. How 20 years prior to that, in South America, you know, where, when he was like 19 years old, he was supposed to marry a gal. She was like 18. There were 300 people invited to the wedding. And she spent $3,000 on a trousseau, whatever the heck it is. Whatever they spent $3,000 on, the wedding dress, the whole bit, at a big Catholic church. And on the day of the wedding, she was there with the 300 people and the dress and everything like that. And he took off for the United States. So he's telling me this, you know, because, yeah, I know, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. You know, you hear stuff like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, we were talking, he was just sharing that. We weren't even at the fourth step or fifth step or anything like that. So the next day, I come to the room, I'm sitting there, we're saying that. He says, well, I'm going to South America. I said, really? He says, yeah, I leave next Wednesday. I got the ticket. I said, really? He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm going to go apologize. Oh. Now, she had already told me that she's been married for 20 years, you know, she's got 3 children, you know. And now, I don't know whether this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing. And I'm not really saying I was that spiritually developed, but somehow, deep down in my gut, I felt that that might be the wrong thing to do. And I suggested to him that maybe the amends at this point in time was to stay the hell out of her life. First of all, if she hadn't put it behind her, she's psychotic. By now, for sure. You know what I mean? And she'd probably stab him with a butcher knife. And if she had put it behind her, why ruin her life, you know? Can you imagine the knock on the door with the 3 kids? Hi, it's me. Little late for the wedding. I'm sorry. Still got the dress? I said, you know, listen. Sure, you think I'm making this? You can't make this stuff up. This is what I said to him. This is how I said, listen. You know, if the Lord wants you to make an amends for her, she'll probably come walking into the call room here. You'll bump into her on the street. You know what I mean? The point is that you're ready to do it. You know what I mean? If you run into her or something like that. Now, I don't know whether that's right, wrong, or indifferent, or whatever the deal is, but it really helps to have a sponsor to sort of sort these things out. Because sometimes it's unclear. There's a whole bunch of things I can cover that I'm not going to cover. Maybe sometime during this thing I will. But in any event, it really is something that frees you from the guilt. You want to be able to walk the planet without, I mean, worry is for crap. I hate, anybody here like anxiety? Like worrying? Like worrying about who's going to call you up and what's, man, I can't tell you how many people I hear on a daily basis, even today, I've heard twice, say to me, I'm not going to go there. And I say, why? Because he's going to be there. Because she's going to be there. Because that guy will be there. You know? My wife told me, I said, let's go to someone. She says, I can't be there because he's going to be there. I don't like that guy. Can you imagine living your life that way? Not being able to walk around the planet and feeling like you're free? You know? And feeling like you're doing something, like you're thwarting him, or you're hurting yourself with these people. You want to get these people off of your mind. You don't want to have these people on your mind. You want to be free of this stuff. So thank you very much. God bless.